Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Thanks for downloading Changing Politics. This is a political podcast hosted by me, comedian Gráinne Maguire, and journalist Marie LeConte, that chats about the week's news and highlights issues that you, yes, you, can make a difference to.
Now, because the first half of each week is topical chat, we reckon you might not be bothered to download old episodes. Some of them are so old, they were recorded back when Boris Johnson was in the cabinet.
So while we're off over the summer, we're re-releasing all the features we've done on how you can get involved in changing the way politics works in this country, which are less topical than the first bit of the show. They're only 10 to 15 minutes long, so we hope you enjoy this new bite-sized form.
This podcast is the feature from the third episode we did, and it's quite harrowing in parts. It's about refugees. We spoke to a Syrian refugee called Hamada, as well as Lord Dubs, who came to the UK in 1939 as a refugee himself, and who has campaigned for refugees' rights for decades. At the time of recording, it was estimated that there were 90,000 child refugees in Northern Europe. So here, from July 13th to 2018, is our feature on what you can do to help refugees. So, the big topic we're tackling this week is immigration and the refugee crisis, and specifically the attitudes British people have towards people coming to the country.
Well, I have some stories about British people reacting negatively to immigrants, but they're specifically just about me.
Oh, what was your immigrant journey like?
Oh my God, it was just a classic. Imagine just Saoirse Ronan playing me. I arrived mid-noughties. I had to live in North Finchley for a while.
Christ.
I was sleeping on a couch. It was really, really brutal. Marie, what was yours like? How delayed was that Eurostar?
Oh God, actually weirdly not delayed, but yeah, no, I mean, so tough, you know, taking the train from my hometown to Paris, taking a cab across Paris from one station to the other, taking the Eurostar, and then actually taking another cab where the cab driver called me love. And yeah, no, awful that, you know, go see several houses, end up in Swiss Cottage, which is in fact the single most boring bit in London. You know, I'm still recovering from that in many ways, you know, 9 years on.
But isn't that, obviously, there are loads of media tropes about refugees and immigrants. So if you believe everything you read in the tabloids, immigrants are to blame for rising house prices, NHS funding shortfalls, and the dumbing down of the BBC. So wow, us immigrants are busy people. Take a day off, guys.
This week we thought we'd tackle some of those tropes head on. We've got an interview with Hamada, a Syrian refugee who has come to the UK, and we're going to try to answer some of the media's biggest questions and accusations with the first-hand experiences of someone who's actually lived through it all. So, Gráinne, you're going to have to be our tabloid headline shouter, providing the angriest anti-immigrant and refugee viewpoints.
It's what I was born to do. And as we're actually recording this on July 12th, an Irish person screaming angry things is very on point. So, why do people want to leave Syria? Why don't they stay and fight?
This is the first question people ask about refugees. We talked to Lord Dubs, who has done a lot of work on refugees and was a refugee himself.
There are a number of reasons why people leave. It's fear of war, it's persecution, it's fear of torture and imprisonment. I was talking to a Syrian boy who'd seen his father killed in front of him in Aleppo. Pretty horrific stories. Threats from the Taliban to young men who'd fled westwards from Afghanistan. So a whole range of reasons. But mostly it's a combination of war, violence, threats and persecution.
It's too easy to get into Europe. We shouldn't give them an incentive.
People then realise how hard it is to get here. We spoke to Hamada, a Syrian refugee who arrived in the UK a month ago.
It takes like 3 weeks. You know, media sometimes they're talking about when refugee pass to, for example, Greece, pass to Europe. Some guys, they think it's like a tourism journey, but unfortunately it was like, I can't say it, a death journey, because some guys, they died in the sea, some guys died in the journey. So when I moved to Turkey and you ask how you can go, for example, to Greece, you see the smuggler and they take you in like in big truck. In big truck, they put like almost 200 person in one truck. It's like small truck, not that big. You have just to be stand up. They drive you like maybe, no, it's like, so when I was like 5 hours, you have to be standing. And it was horrible because there is no space to sit, even no standing, because there is kids, there is families. No one tell me about this. If I know this, really, I'm not gonna do it. But what happened? You have to do it. So then they put you in the small boat, and almost like 40, sometimes 50. Like there is kids, there is families. So in that time, it was the weather wasn't fine. Because we waited almost 2 days, because the weather was very bad, but we slept like 2 days there, no food, and I was amazed, because it was very horrible, very hard. I didn't know about that. I thought it's like tourism trip. You take the boat and you will go. No, it's not like this. So we were like almost 45 when a mini boat walked with us, and we are in the sea. They told us it takes like 1 hour. It takes more than that. And the first 1 hour, like the water came in the boat. You feel like, oh, I'm going to die soon. I'm going to die soon. Why? So what we did, we caught like half of a bottle of water, and we tried to throw water out. You need to save your life. So we did it first time, then it was okay. Then after like 15 minutes, the same. A big wave came in, and then we start guys throw. They have some guys, some people, they have some bags. So they throw the bags out, because you know the bags is going to be wet and you're going to be more heavy. So second time again, water. We throw the water. Then the third time, water. Then you say, okay, maybe we aren't safe. We are close now. So after like another like 1 hour, the machine stopped and we stuck. We tried to call the like Turkish number, like for emergency help us. They didn't answer. We tried to the Greece one. They didn't answer. So one man, he used to work like a mechanic. So he tried with it like almost 15 minutes. Then it worked. So we landed in the Greece. And there we saw some amazing volunteers, really. They give us like some blanket. They give us some like... When you saw this in your eyes, when you see some guys that look after you, sell you things, they are like, look like angels. Then you have to move to Macedonia. We take like ferry to Athens. From Athens, we talk to Macedonia. Macedonia, we feel we aren't welcome there, because they look at, oh, we are strangers. Some, even in our journey, some guys, they think, oh, we are like tourism. They ask you for money, but for example, you don't have money. So we tried to move quickly as soon as possible, and we moved to Serbia, the same situation. If you need to go from Serbia to Croatia, you have even to pay more money. So from Croatia, we moved to Slovenia. So from Slovenia, we moved to Austria. To Austria was, okay, not bad situation, but my plan, just I want to go to like United Kingdom. So from Austria, we moved to Germany. Then we moved to France to Calais. Now from Calais until the UK, this is another challenge. It was very hard.
Why do they want to come here? They could just stay in Hungary and Austria.
This is technically true, but there are reasons why people might want to come to the UK. Here are Lord Dubs and Himada.
What is it about the UK? Well, sometimes it's a historic thing that they've long thought about the UK as being the place, if they can find safety, they'd like to go to. Sometimes they've got more sense of the English language than they have of other languages. Sometimes it's because they have relatives who've made it to the UK. But I'm bound to say, because by the time they get to Calais, that they're UK bound if they can possibly do it. But talk to the people in the camps in Greece, the majority wanted to go to Germany. And I think Germany has now become much more of a target, partly because they know people in Germany because of the numbers Germany has taken, partly because they have a sense the Germans look after them well. But the UK still has this tremendous pull. I was at a place for child refugees in Belgium a few months ago, and they all, a lot of them, had set their sights on coming to the UK. So I think it's a combination of tradition, language, the sense that they have freedom here, and that they know people here.
It was like a hope when I was almost in secondary school, when we started about, we used to study, even when we used to study English, I remember when they told us about UK, about especially England, London, how is human right there, how there is a Hyde Park, and there is like called a corner in the Hyde Park, and you can talk whatever you want, no one gonna blame you, and you will get like this freedom. I say, oh my God. So of course I wish I'm gonna get to England.
They got to the jungle. Why don't they just stay there?
Well, they can't because it's been destroyed, but Alf went to visit several refugee camps around Europe.
The first time when the jungle was there, quite a large area, there were perhaps 8,000 or 9,000 or more people living there, quite a few children, but mainly young men. And it was pretty depressing. There were ramshackle sort of tents and things. In the middle of the jungle, there was a little shopping street, and they had on display tear gas canisters and rubber bullets. And I said, what were they for? Well, they said the then French government tried to clear part of the camp, and to clear the people out, they used tear gas and rubber bullets. Why did they do that? Well, because the National Front are quite strong in that part of France, and the French government wanted to demonstrate they could be tough. Well, it seems to me, you don't beat the National Front by behaving like they would. And then the third time I went, the jungle had been totally cleared, people had been dispersed, but some had made their way back the Channel Coast and then just sleeping under trees. Now, in warm weather, sleeping under trees is tolerable but awful. In cold weather, it's very, very depressing indeed.
This isn't our problem.
Well, it's a big problem and everyone needs to do their part.
Worldwide, there are probably over 30 million refugees, plus about over 30 million displaced persons. That's people who fled for safety to another part of their own country. So it's about 65 million altogether. I don't know quite what the latest figures are in Syria. I know there are about 3 million in Turkey, 1 million in Jordan, 1 million in Lebanon, and that's 5 million, and probably about 1 million have worked their way to Europe.
If you see the exploitation and try, imagine what's going to happen, for example, for kids, if they have in this situation, for example, in Greece, how many kids there are there and how many women, girls there. But just imagine what this word means. Like I'm young guy, and I used to see really, unfortunately, so many like exploitation. This would happen in one country. They told me, I can't help you to get a passport for this European country. I'm not gonna name which country, but you have to marry me. Excuse me, I would like, if I'm going to marry in the future, I'm going to marry a girl. So he told me, in our country, the men can marry together. I say, yeah, but please, so this what happened for like men, young men. So what about these kids? What they can see in their journey, some girls, they stuck, really.
Okay, so what can we do?
Well, here's what Hamada said helped him.
The hard thing is to find accommodation in the beginning. Because at the beginning, you came here, you will find accommodation, they give it to you. But after, when you get the visa, in 28 days, they tell you, you have to leave your room. So yeah, this is a big thing to worry about. Because if you have no friends, it's hard. Where do you go? In that time when I had this situation, I remember here in UK, even especially, there is a very good organization called Refugees at Home. If they see your situation, you need help, they try their best, and really they helped me to find, like, even in the beginning, you need to learn about language, to find job. So this, what they helped me, really, they did a very good job.
And Lord Doves has four things he wants you to do.
One is that they should approach their MP and ask them whether they will go on giving support to Section 67 of the Immigration Act. Some people call it the Dubs Amendment, but the media have done that. I don't call it that, because the government put a cap on it at 480. And frankly, we believe local authorities are able to provide foster care support for more than that number. So point one is to ask them to keep Section 67 of the Immigration Act open, not allow the government to stop it. Secondly, we passed an amendment here recently that for children who have relatives here under the Dublin Treaty, we've passed an amendment to the Leaving the EU Bill to say the government must negotiate for us to continue to be part of the Dublin Treaty. So children who have relatives in one EU country can join those in another, and once we've left the EU, it should still be possible for those children who've got relatives here to come here as if we were in the EU under those provisions, okay? So that's the second ask. The third ask is that there is a limited scheme whereby Britain takes refugees under the Vulnerable Person Scheme from camps in Lebanon, Jordan and Turkey. That scheme will come to an end in 2020. And people should ask their MPs to keep the Syrian Vulnerable Person Scheme open, so that we can go on bringing people, a limited number of people, from the region. And fourthly, I'd like people to lobby their local councillors and their local authorities and ask them what they're doing to take refugees, to take both child refugees and to take refugee families.
So that's what you can do this week. If you can donate even a little bit of money to Refugees at Home, they will help refugees get on their feet. Their website is refugeesathome.org.
You can also donate phone credit to refugees in Calais through Phone Credit for Refugees at pc4r.org. Because imagine spending 3 weeks getting to Calais from Syria. How much would it mean to speak to your mum?
And it's so easy. Text CALA85 plus the amount you want to donate. For example, CALA85 #527070.
And don't forget to contact your MP or local council, like Lord Dubs asked.
Thanks for listening to this feature-only episode of Changing Politics. You can follow us on Twitter at Changing Polypod and Facebook, Changing Pol, for more information, including when we'll be back with new full episodes. Until then, thanks for listening.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.